Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Tamsin Ford. Welcome to the programme from Sao Tome and Principe, the archipelago in the Gulf of Guinea in Central Africa, which is also known as the Chocolate Islands. On today's programme, we take a look at how and why this tiny nation lost its title as the biggest cocoa exporter in the world. We'll hear from farmers. Plus, why quality, not quantity, is now the country's focus.
We understood that we could not compete with big countries producing cocoa, out of question. So we decided to go on quality.
And I'm John Bithrie in London. Also on the programme, growing concerns about China's economy as the lockdown in Shanghai continues.
As long as you have a physical space in Shanghai, then you're not allowed to continue operating at all.
That's coming up later. First, though, to Tamsin in Sao Tome.
Thanks, John. Yes, we've been here all week. We've focused on the impact of climate change for island nations such as this one and what it's like to have one of the youngest populations in the world. But today we're looking at cocoa because, of course, as you just heard, this twin island nation used to be the main source of the world's cocoa. To give you a little idea of what it's like here, these are volcanic islands, not active, fortunately, but bejeweled with rich, dense rainforest, broken only by shards of volcanic rock, which, if I stretch, I can see right in front of me, some of them as high as 2,000 metres above sea level. Now, these islands were uninhabited until their discovery by Portuguese explorers in the 15th century, who brought slaves to work the land, producing cash crops like sugar and coffee. Eventually, these crops were replaced by cocoa, and the islands became the biggest cocoa exporter in the world. In the 19th and 20th centuries, more than 200 roças, that's the Portuguese word for plantation, produced coffee and cocoa, farmed first by the slaves and then by forced, exploited islanders, really. Chocolate manufacturers like Cadbury's, Roundtree's and Fry's all bought their beans from here until these horrific slave-like working conditions were exposed. So then by the 1920s, the companies had switched their source of beans to Ghana and Ivory Coast, thus ending Sao Tome's title as the world's largest exporter. Now, when the islands gained independence in 1975, the first thing the new government did was to nationalise these roças. Parcels of land were given to islanders, and many of the really rather magnificent but imperious Portuguese plantation mansions that you see everywhere here now lie abandoned. Some have been turned into luxury hotels, and others have been taken over by foreign companies. So that's a bit of history for you, a bit of cocoa history in particular. Now, we've visited many of these roasters on the islands, and I'm going to take you to one of them, Diego Vaz, in the northwest of Sao Tome. A farmer slices ripe yellow and purple pods from the cocoa trees. They fall to the ground, ready for collection. Cocoa trees here are grown in the middle of the rainforest. They've got huge towering trees providing the incredible shade that cocoa trees need to produce good fruits. And we're at the start of the harvest, so you can already see ripe, plump pods hanging from each of the trees.
Eu chamo Ernesto de Saita.
68-year-old Ernest Trocetta collects the pods and puts them in Hessian sacks. He's been farming cocoa for 25 years. He owns 4 hectares of land.
Sim, já estou no cacau já há 25 anos.
I ask him how much he makes.
Ganho 30 vezes mais do que aqui. Ganho muito.
He says he can earn around 50 to 60,000 dobras a year. That's about $2,500.
Ah, um valor. 50, 60 mil.
So they've opened a cocoa pod. Podemos, are you actually crunch the beans, mm-hmm. do you?
Okay,
he's asking me to bite into the cocoa beans.
Is white.
But the cocoa pulp, oh, and that's quite bitter.
It's different.
It's showing me another variety when you bite into the cocoa bean. It's actually bright red inside, almost beetroot colour. But still delicious, very sweet tasting fruit pulp around the cocoa beans.
My name is Fegek Tatadele Idnagacho, but you can call me Feg. It's much simpler.
Feg is an agronomist from Ethiopia. She works for the Kennison Group, the French company who took over the Diogo Vage plantation almost 2 decades ago. She manages the diversification sector and the plant nursery.
The Diogo Vage plantation is 420 hectares. We use about 200 hectares for the cultivation of cacao. But then we also have about 3 hectares each of vanilla and pepper and about 2 hectares of coffee. And on the plantation, along with the cacao, we also have a bunch of fruit trees, shade trees. We tried to recreate the natural environment of the cocoa tree, which was normally on the lower story of the Amazon rainforest. So we tried to replicate that because the cacao trees are happier in these conditions.
São Tomé is now a small player in the world's cocoa sector. But many here claim that while it doesn't produce the most cocoa, it produces the best. I spoke to President Carlos Villanova at the Palacio Cordarosa in the centre of town. He says for a small island nation, the only way forward is focusing on quality, not quantity.
Mainly by the years 80, end of the years 80, beginning of 90, we understood that we could not compete with big countries producing cocoa, out of question. So we decided to go on quality. There are a typic specimen of cocoa that you can get only in São Tomé. Almenolado, it's very tasteful and very quality. And we also decided to produce biological cocoa only. So that makes it with high, very quality. So everybody is looking to get our production. What we cannot sell when you come to buy, you have to buy it a few years previously to have it, so you
because
see.
It's in demand.
Yes. So in my opinion, that's the way for agriculture. We produce like gourmet. We have to go on gourmet. Otherwise, we cannot survive producing quantity.
Because you haven't got the size.
No, we don't have the size.
Cocoa here is certified organic, which means farmers can get a little more money for their beans.
This means that we're not allowed to use certain products in the plantation. Well, most of the practices are more eco-friendly, but it also means that they will get a higher selling price.
So you get a premium on the cocoa.
Exactly. Everybody can earn a little bit more if there's an organic certification because it requires a little bit more work.
Why do you think it's so important to do tree-to-bar chocolate within the country? You know, I've spoken to so many chocolate producers. It's impossible to do it in Ivory Coast. It costs too much money. It's too hot. How can we transport it?
It is obviously a challenge. Tree to bar is a huge challenge. It's a huge undertaking, but it's definitely possible. And by keeping it in the country, not only do we add value to the product by transforming it into chocolate, but we also create jobs. And I think if that's not done, it's mostly because nobody's willing to make the investment or pay a little bit more for the chocolate or the cacao. We're all very passionate about this because chocolate is a product that is widely consumed, especially in the Western countries. None of that income, none of it goes to producers. Cacao producers are really struggling. They're not managing to make a living. I mean, it's really hard not to be passionate about it because it's these people who supply most of the cacao used for the chocolate in the Western world, barely make enough to survive. It's very important to add value here and let the producers, you know, earn the right amount for all their work so that, you know, we can keep enjoying this chocolate but not force the ones at the very beginning of the chain to pay for it.
So then how do you do that here?
Well, what we're trying to do is, well, we have our plantation, but we also produce chocolate here. And we're hoping that by producing chocolate here, we can add some of this value in Sao Tome so that the value stays here. And hopefully with time, we can earn more money, pay producers more for their cacao, and really make sure that the producers are the ones who benefit the most from this culture.
In the middle of Sao Tome, high in the mountains, is another cocoa operation. 71-year-old Italian Claudio Corallo has around 160 hectares spread across both islands. The cocoa is shipped from Principe here to Sao Tome, where it's transformed. We're about 1,000 foot above sea level here at Nova Rocca, which is part of Claudio's cocoa operations. There's an incredible view of the bay, which is about 30 minutes down the hill from here. And the sound you can hear behind me is the sound of cocoa beans being crushed by hand. There are about 20 women sitting on wooden benches, each with a pile of cocoa beans in front of them. And they take a cocoa bean, crush it, remove the shell, and then it leaves what's called the cocoa nibs. And that is what is used to make the chocolate.
Try this. This is the shell, and this is the nib.
Claudio takes me to his small factory in Sao Tome's capital, where he turns the cocoa into chocolate.
Allora, for appreciate 100%, you have to try 4 pieces.
Claudio is passionate about the taste.
It's not possible to produce the highest quality if you don't have the top raw material.
And why did you decide to make chocolate from soil to bar when most cocoa production in the world is simply exporting the cocoa?
But
and then
when I thought I want to produce cocoa, for me, I wanted to produce the high quality. For this reason, I started different tests with our cacao, and during this process, born our chocolate.
The COVID pandemic decimated cocoa production on the islands. Nothing could be exported. Claudio was stranded in Italy for a year and had to let two-thirds of his 250-strong workforce go. Claudio's passion for the taste of his product, he says, is what saved them.
The quality of our product saved our life.
It tastes a lot more
alive.
There's more cocoa somehow.
It's more alive.
Claudio and Tamazin there on the challenges facing cocoa producers in Sao Tome. We'll be back with Tamazin shortly on today's World Business Report. Now, though, there are signs of growing tension in the Chinese financial capital of Shanghai as a strict COVID lockdown enters its third week. Videos emerged of clashes between police and residents who are being removed from their homes, which are set to be turned into quarantine centres. There's now increasing concern about the impact of the latest lockdown on China's economy as a whole. The tech giant Huawei has warned that most factories in Shanghai could grind to a halt if restrictions aren't lifted soon. Automakers, including Volkswagen and several Chinese electric vehicle manufacturers, have been forced to cut production. Nicole lives in central Shanghai. She works for a foreign company. She's been working from home during the lockdown and says the restrictions are hitting smaller businesses, especially hard.
The ones shut up completely are more like retail food and beverage. As long as you have a physical space in Shanghai, then you're not allowed to continue operating at all. A lot of them are struggling to continue with the takeaway and the things like that with very bare minimum employee numbers. And all those employees have to stay and live in the restaurant or in the space they are working in order to do that.
And is the government requiring some businesses that they view as essential to the working of the city and people's well-being? Are they being required to carry on?
So they are allowed to carry on. We still have a very bare minimum level of transportation to distribute food and like medicine and things like that. It's super hard to get the transportation pass. That's a license issued by the government. For the retail business, it's almost impossible. If you're just a smaller business owner, it's very hard for you to actually get a license to continue your business if that involves transportation.
And what about feeding the city during this time, Nicole? How is the government, how are the authorities managing to do that?
The government only provide very foundational amount. There's not grain and meat every time. So you basically get very foundational, like rice and oil and things like that. So we basically have a huge gap in the market. That's what we actually need. We need to buy it. And we as residents are not allowed to go out to buy. Basically, what we do is keep an eye on the chat group and see if there's a window or chance for you to join a group purchase. And on the other hand, and a good thing is like Jingdong. Jingdong is the Chinese Amazon. So they resumed the very small portion of their transportation power in Shanghai. So some of the deliveries are resuming very slightly and slowly in the past 2 weeks as well.
And you mentioned some government help earlier. I mean, what kind of government help is available to businesses that have had to shut down or workers who are not able to work during this period?
I think in Shanghai, unfortunately, I didn't hear any government sponsorship or support, such as tax, such as social benefit, such as, the rent of the working space. That were all supported by the Shenzhen government a while ago. But for Shanghai, it has been 4 weeks and we don't see any of that. So that's very unfortunate.
And there are reports of growing frustrations, protests, officials being, questioned forcefully about what is going on, people feeling quite desperate.
Yes, there are huge population out there who tested positive. So the conflict you just mentioned, it comes from the debate over do we need, centric campers or not? Do we send those people over that? The centralized, sort of hospital are not up to the speed of the growth of the positive cases as of now. So basically they're taking... the government here are taking a lot of the community middle schools and the primary schools and turn them into the campus. That resulted a very strong resistance from the local residents because their neighborhood are too close to the school. They have a lot of health concerns and most of all, they don't want to become positive and get transferred to the campus as well. So that's a lot of conflict there. And around that conflict, I guess these messages are not transparent and not being communicated well as well. So for me, I don't have a sense of when we will be able to go out at all as the policies literally changes daily.
Nicole from Shanghai describing the impact of the strict lockdown measures on the city there. Let's go back to Tamazin Ford in Sao Tome now, where we've been hearing from her about the cocoa sector. And Tamazin, we know cocoa growers the world over get a fraction of the final price of a chocolate bar. How can farmers be given a better deal?
Well, that really is the big question, isn't it? So here on Sao Tome, the cocoa is certified organic, as you heard earlier. So farmers do get a little bit more money for their cocoa beans. Yet even with all of these certification programs, farmers get very little compared to the people involved in the multi-billion dollar chocolate industry. I want to take you away from Sao Tome and Principe for a moment to Ghana, because a Swiss Ghanaian startup called Koa is doing something really quite interesting, and I've never heard about it in all the time that I lived in West Africa for the BBC. They're actually buying the cocoa pulp from the farmers. That's the white, fleshy fruit inside of the pod, which mainly gets discarded. So that adds a new source of income, and sometimes worth up to an extra 30%. They work with around 2,000 cocoa growers in Asin Akrafom at the moment. That's about a four-hour drive east of the capital, Accra. But they're hoping to increase that by 10,000 by the end of the year when they build a second factory. My colleague in Ghana, Thomas Nardi, went to have a look.
I'm at a very vibrant farming community called Aigo, located in the middle of a tropical rainforest. The people here are predominantly cocoa farmers. So this is the community processing unit,
yes,
which is a trailer and can be moved to any cocoa producing area. And it's basically a track which is covered with nets to prevent flies and mosquitoes from contaminating the juice. And inside I can see stainless steel barrels with holes. And there's a balloon in the middle which expands to squeeze the beans and extract the juice into a receptacle. And that is how they get it. After that, the beans is now emptied into sacks and then given back to the farmer. So let me just take a glass of the juice just to get a taste. Mmm! Wow! It's very sweet. Afterwards, the juice is pasteurized. Is heated to kill any bacteria.
So that's a depulper.
This is Priscilla Diditete, who works at the factory.
And it has some rotating blades. So it has some rotating blades. The beans rotate and then they rub against the sieve to bring out the pulp.
When Kua started this program, farmers were skeptical. The complicated process of fermentation involves using some of the pulp to help ferment the cocoa beans. They thought if they sold it, it would change the quality of the beans. They also couldn't imagine anyone buying the waste that was left over.
I think cocoa has been with us for quite a long time, and most of these things hasn't been used. So to tell a farmer that something which is going to waste, you are going to pay for it, is something like hilarious.
Daniel Otu is the Operational and Productions Director at Kua.
So initially it was difficult. You need to explain your concept to them. Develop, take samples from, buy the beans in addition to the pulp, press it for them to see that the beans will not go waste and it will not lose weight before other people will also buy into this concept. So I think, as we know, people, it is very difficult to change their mind. But with little experimentation, they were able to grasp our concepts.
Okay, so we are now walking through some of the cocoa plantations to speak to some farmers.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
How is business?
Nana Set is in his late 40s. He has 15 acres of cocoa. He says he was really nervous when Kua came to the community. He thought it would spoil their cocoa beans. More than 2,000 farmers now sell their pulp to Kua. Kua then sells it both as juice and a powder, which the Swiss chocolatier, Lindt, buys to replace the sugar in some of their chocolate. 60-year-old Sarah Kumsen has 3 acres of cocoa. She says that selling the pulp has helped her a lot. It has helped everyone. She says farmers are all making more money now.
Thomas Nardi reporting from Ghana on an innovative way cocoa farmers there are making more money. Well, some final thoughts from Tamazin in Sao Tome. Tamazin, chocolate may be on the minds of many today, not least because it's Easter and some people around the world celebrate Easter with chocolate eggs. But many may not think about or know about where their chocolate actually comes from.
Well, that's it, John. And if you are a lover of chocolate, like I am, it's really easy to forget that those at the beginning of the chain really make the least amount of money. And it's the same with commodities the world over. Nations really are trying to think about how they bring that added value to their country, which is why Sao Tome has this big focus on producing chocolate here. Because as we heard earlier, it not only brings those extra jobs, but it also keeps some of that incredible wealth in the country.
And you've been there in Sao Tome and Principe for a couple of weeks now for your series of reports that we've heard on World Business Report. What are your sort of final impressions, your overall impressions, if you like, of this small island nation? Has it got good things ahead?
Well, it's breathtakingly beautiful. We've been to the rainforest. Two-thirds of these islands are national parks, so they're really aware of this incredible biodiversity that they've got here. One thing I did want to say, we touched on COVID earlier in some of those interviews, but that really has decimated everything on the island. Tourism was becoming quite a thing, and the government here really wanted to push this ecotourism. In 2019, they got 33,000 visitors, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're a country of 200,000 people, that brings in quite a bit of foreign money and jobs for local hotels. And of course, that all stopped. I mean, everything stopped. There were no flights in or out. You couldn't travel between the two islands. Even at this hotel that we're staying at, it's beautiful, but there is a sadness here that there just aren't lots of people around. But it is changing, and tourists are coming back. One of the really lovely things that I found here, there's an expression here called leve leve, which means, and that's on Sao Tome, which means relax, chill out. But when you go to Principe, the expression is leve leve leve. Relax, relax, relax. And so that gives you an idea of the feel here.
That sounds like some extremely good advice for all of us. OK, Tamazin, thank you so much. Tamazin Ford, reporting from Sao Tome and Principe. You can hear all of her reports from the week. Do search online for this programme or podcast, BBC World Business Report. I'm John Bithrie in London. It's goodbye for now.